everyone. Thanks, and thanks for the invite. I will say before we start that we are incredibly less academic than the previous two, and we're two graphic design graduates from Brighton University, and we graduated 3 years ago, and since then have kind of gone on a bit of a do-it-yourself process, I guess, to set up what we call It's Nice That, which is an online daily blog. And this is the really dry little blurb that we say what we do, in that we create, publish and direct a diverse range of exciting work from across the creative industry. But that's basically, we post up online every single day, and then we also direct practitioners commercially for brands, for smaller companies, to create design solutions, so in a classic design studio way. So
it's probably worth mentioning that this statement changes probably every 6 months. We reevaluate and reorder the words and come up and think we do something different, but I don't think we do. Here's a quick summary of a few of the things that we would post. Do you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, so this first one is basically, this next four slides will just give you an idea of the kind of things that we would post. This is a guy called Craig Dan Rohrer from America. He does this thing called New Math, which is tons and tons of these equations. It's a guy called Thomas Allen, who's an artist, again from America, who cuts out these covers and makes dioramas. But really, really beautiful work. But I think all we're trying to say here is that there's a kind of aesthetic and a lightheartedness that that we like to cover, because we can probably cover nothing else. That's just who we are, and there's no forced nature to what we write about or what we post. It's just the things that we're looking at. This is a Chinese artist called Li Wei, who's a photographer. And then this is an RCA graduate called Matilda Tristram, and this is a piece called Balloon Tunes, and these are just recorders in balloons. But you can't hear it. It's good if you can hear it.
Okay, so I guess looking at what we're supposed to be talking about today, this was up on the website today, which is they'll be talking about how the site is developed, both on and offline, as well as whether or not there's a plan. Simple answer to the was there ever a plan, with Hannibal from the A-Team, famous for the I love it when a plan comes together, there's no plan. We've got no Hannibal. There's no sort of big plan. Everything's grown totally organically. So I guess the other side to what we're supposed to be talking about today is the DIY, which is the whole do-it-yourself mentality, which I guess is we've sort of not forced the way that we've gone about doing it as a DIY. It just happens to be that's what we're doing. But when thinking about what we're supposed to be talking about today, which is do-it-yourself, we've also come up with a few other ones, which DNY, which is do nothing yourself. Not wanting to come across as lazy, but I think one of the big things that we try and talk about is when there are other people that can do things better than yourselves, try and get them involved wherever possible. Obviously, the budget has to allow, but essentially there's a lot, we've recognised that there's a lot of other people that can do what we want to do better, so to get them involved wherever possible.
And then I guess finally, that do it differently. There's always a real thought to what we're doing. Why are we producing whatever we're producing? Why is the blog any different from anyone else's? Why is our publication any different? Why are the projects any different? Because if we're just copying someone else's, or if the projects kind of reach the same goal and the same audience, there's no real point. And so we think about all those things kind of in a bit of a tongue-in-cheek way, that it's not just about us doing it all ourselves, but there's more of a thought than that. I think a lot of this, the DIY, when people speak about it, everyone feels like it's rushed. It's that kind of that rough trade, get it out, see what happens. And that's true, but I like to think we're a little bit more considered than that.
Also, just on the do it differently, it's not reinventing the wheel for the sake of reinventing the wheel. If the wheel does a perfectly good job, then keep using the wheel. It's that idea of just evaluating what we're trying to do.
So I guess what we're going to do is just take you really quickly through 3 years, skipping out a lot of it, but we met in the second year at Brighton University. At Brighton, you have to raise funds for your final year degree show, and you don't if you want a show in London. So basically, all the students have to find a way to make money, and this is done on a creative course. It's kind of done really uncreatively, and so mostly everyone just dresses up as in fancy dress and has a party on the seafront and charges everyone £3. And that was kind of it. That was the long and short of how people were earning money in graphic design to kind of get a bank of money for their degree show. So we kind of, again, just as friends, thought, why don't we tug on the heartstrings a little bit of old Brighton designers and illustrators, get them to submit us work and sell it. And maybe in 2007 that was a little bit less familiar than it is now. So
And again, I think without knowing it, we were doing that DIY, we were doing it, we were trying to approach it differently and do it differently. And I guess to a certain extent, we were doing it using other people. We recognised that as sort of second year designers, not that many people are going to put their hand in the pocket and pay a tenner for something. We were starting to make connections with people in the industry, the idea of them doing something that we could then print, we could put our own mark on it, but essentially it's something that we recognise people might want to pay money for.
But basically, yeah, collating things ourselves and creating things ourselves and working out that maybe we were art directors rather than designers without ever really thinking about that. And so this is kind of 2007 when it came out, and we got stocked in loads of places and we earned a little bit of money for the course. But basically there's a just tiny little goal, and that was it. It was just to earn money for the course. There wasn't a goal to have a blog. There was definitely not a goal to have an agency. It was as simple as we need to put our show up at the end of the year, and that was it. And I can't stress that enough. I don't think we're clever enough to have this huge plan. Anyway.
So then it's nice that sort of evolved out of a university brief, which was put something in the public domain to make people feel better about themselves. The idea of just highlighting someone's work. Again, as Alex just said, when we started this, it was just to sort of do a blog, do a uni brief. There was no grand plan of at the end of May in 2010 we'll be up here giving a lecture about what we do. It was very, this is it, let's just get it out, as most other university briefs were. So this is what the first blog sort of looked like. So just to reiterate the idea of the blog, I was rubbish at remembering people's names. So the idea of putting an image with a bit of copy, and I found bookmarking stuff online really difficult, and the idea of, I guess it was just as blogs were becoming a little bit more prominent. So essentially it started as just posting graphic design illustration. It's an aesthetic, or it's an idea, or it's not these big budget ad campaigns, or it's not the sort of high-end design studios. It is just that passing comment that you tend to sort of say, oh, it's nice that it's that broken English, it's the sentiment.
But at this point in April 2007, it's a friend in the year below building it. It's Will asking other people for, it's very much Will doing it on his own and asking other people to contribute from time to time. But so low key, there's an audience of maybe 30 in the class and that's it.
So then a few months later, we came to putting up our graduate degree show. We'd done another If You Could that we, Alex and I, put our own money into and done. So this is just a photo of it at Brighton. But essentially, when we graduated, again, there was no big idea of, right, let's go and start a studio. So we both went and got jobs. I went and got a job at a place called Mark Creative, which does quite classic, quite traditional graphic design. Alex went and worked for an illustration agency called Peep Show.
But I guess at this point, there was a thought that actually we were doing this If You Could project that we've not spoken a whole lot about, but with that we were getting offered to do bits and pieces, and maybe we should do a studio, maybe we should just start a studio. But in that whole, again, that DIY ethic, we were keen to do that, but I think we felt that it would be a naive step and an arrogant step to say, actually, yeah, we can do this. We've done one book and we put a degree show up. So I guess the point of putting in the industry things is that we were keen to learn something else from someone else. And I think that's really, really important, that you can do a lot yourself, but you can't do everything yourself. And also at this point, we're honing different skills. I'm at Peep Show doing more project management, and Will's at Mark doing more classic graphic design. And again, not really thinking about that of creating a studio one day, but subconsciously maybe.
But having said that, I'd been there for about 9 months. I'd gone into the job straight off the back of graduating. I'd got quite frustrated with the way that the studio was working. How I was working on a lot of pitches, but not being able to go and actually do the pitch. So I got quite frustrated. We got offered more and more work. So eventually I handed in my notice just with the idea of freelancing. Alex was spending a few days a week at Peep Show. So we ended up starting to work together and we won a project. So this is the first studio, not actually Battersea Power Station, but we don't have a photo of the studio in Battersea, which is it was a studio that I've got in the flat that I rent quite quickly after that. We ended up moving over to Shoreditch because we realised that the client we were working with was based over there, and it just made, logistically, it was better for us both to get up and get out of our own houses into a studio and try and operate a little more professionally. So we hired two desks at Peep Show where Alex had been working.
But I guess through this, we've had in less than 3 years, we've kind of had six studios for want of kind of trying to get cheaper rent or not being in the right place at the right time. And so we kind of show you them, that this was the second one, and one of the nice ones. But we were basically, at this point, we were calling ourselves Hudson Beck, and we were doing design work. And it's nice that was this separate thing still. We still didn't, you know, it was just ticking over. It wasn't the be all and end all. It's not what we woke up to do. We woke up to be a design studio. And again, very little plan to be saying that's going to be it one day. We were just getting on with lots of different things.
And it's nice that was just running in the background. So that was one of the first commercial projects we worked on. We then pitched on the YCN Book, who's the Young Creative Network, the agency in London, who do an annual every year. We pitched on it, won it as part of the win. We ended up going in and moving into their studio. So this was like the third studio in probably 3 months,
yeah,
probably if that. Worked there for the whole summer, working on the YCN Book, which is that's how that came out. They then moved out. We moved with them, so that's probably 4 studios in 4 months.
And then at this point, it's kind of we were only taking that. The YCN job was great because it paid for us for 4 months. We're like, well, we can survive for 4 months, so let's just keep doing it for 4 months. And again, there's no thought that we're going to have to wake up at some point and get a job, and we still weren't having to do that.
So they got to a point where it's nice that we're still just me running it. In order for us to actually work better on a day-to-day, because I was doing it before work, I was doing it after work, I was feeling guilty working on it during the day when we had commercial work on. So we got together, similar to those two. And basically Alex bought into it's nice that he paid a sum of money that we somehow worked out how much it was maybe worth. So it became something that we could concentrate on. It became something that we could spend time during the day. Right, what are we going to do with it? What can it do? At this point, going from probably, I don't know, maybe 2,000 people looking at it a month, at this stage we're probably up to 65, 75,000 people looking at it every month. There was an audience there that were a loyal audience. They were coming back. They were looking at the stuff that we were posting. Still not really making any money off doing the blog. It was just a blog that we were contributing to on a daily basis.
But what's really important about the audience there is that it's all determined by demand. All of these things... if people didn't look at what we liked posting, there'd be no business here. But actually, more people were looking at it, so it was time to push the design studio to one side. And actually, this is the thing that's going to really work. We were happy to get things wrong all the way along, and it's nice that was the thing that we were, at this point, interested in getting wrong for a bit. And actually, let's put all our eggs in this basket, because out of our decision, we think this is going to be the best one.
So again, going back to what we talked about right at the beginning, which one was it? It was the... do nothing yourself. So we recognised that, right, we wanted to push the blog. There was a real opportunity to sort of push it. And in order to do so, we went and met with a group of web developers who we'd worked with on the latest If You Could that we were again doing in the background. Sitting down and saying to guys who know exactly what they're doing, right, this is what we want to do. It needs to be more flexible. We were, all the copy that accompanied each article was probably 50 words. And we wanted to start expanding the content. We were making more and more connections with people, and actually there was content that warranted more than 50 words. It warranted a few questions. It warranted a few extended articles that meant we were sourcing primary content instead of just taking it from all the different places and collating it on. It's nice that. So sitting down with them and saying, right, this is what we want to do. How does it happen? How much does it cost? How do we work out a way of that working?
But again, very keen to not just have a blog. There's millions of these blogs, and if they're just adding another barrier to get to work, then it's doing no real job. What we want to do is curate things we thought were great that might go missing if we didn't have this blog. And so that there's a real point, again, is that doing it differently as well as doing it yourself is to think, you know, well, we have this platform that people are looking at morally, and what can we do with it to actually contribute something rather than just make a little bit of money on banner ads. And so this is a feature that we do every week called Guest Post, where we get someone else to write for 5 days, and they talk about what they're looking at.
The idea being that to have two voices the whole time, it gets a bit boring to introduce someone else on a weekly basis to sort of freshen it up, to pull things out that actually we had never seen and would never have seen. They get something out of it. They get to be up there. They get to show a bit of work. They get to talk about what they're up to, but then also contribute and say this is... like maybe check this out, maybe look at this.
So about this time last year, we launched the first, it's nice, that printed publication, and that wasn't kind of in deep in recession, all the print going to pot, no one really buying any print, no advertising being done. So we wanted to set up a publication that first and foremost could respect the content that we were posting a little bit more. It could print something as it was always meant to be printed. It allowed us to do 2,000 word interviews instead of 200 word interviews. And also it covered things that maybe weren't in the design press at the moment, and that's really important. Why Creative Review and Graphic are doing a brilliant job speaking about the Olympic logo, and Rick Pointer writing about X in the design industry. That's really important, but that wasn't for us, and there was no point in redoing that, whether we could sell copies or not.
There is a magazine under there. There's also, it's quite a bleached image, there's DID again, which is Do It Differently, which just alludes from what Alex was saying, which is let's not just go and produce another magazine that you can already just go in and pick up and buy. Let's think about what we want to see. I think it was also at a time, which I guess is more prominent now, which is how a monthly magazine, how a weekly, how a daily newspaper operates, and how if all this content is accessible online when you want it, what's going to make someone put their hand in the pocket and pay a tenner? So it's that idea of archiving this content, all this content that we show on screen, which is predominantly for print. Let's show it in its best possible format. Let's show it as big as possible. Let's really showcase the work. And again, let's go and produce content that doesn't really exist online, because you don't want to spend 20 minutes reading an interview online. You want to interact with something a little differently. It's let's put high production values into something and have a real tangible item that lives on the shelf that can be referred to 6 months down the line and not just for the week it's out.
So on the same line, this has DMY over the top of it that we spoke about before, which is do nothing yourself again. It's kind of those two thoughts, actually, what do you really want to make happen and who's going to make that happen the best with us? And so we brought in a magazine designer called Joe Burrin, who was fantastic, and we spoke to him about content, a very collaborative process to produce the best thing. We've always spoken about it. It's nice that kind of flattening an ego. We're not interested in fame from it. We're not interested in saying we're the best designers in the world. We're just interested in genuinely in showing people other work that we think is good.
I think the thing that comes up at this point when we mention about bringing Joe in, Joe I'd worked with at Mark. We were trying to run a design studio at the same time, and a lot of people sort of say, why did you bring someone in? Surely that is your skill set. I think we could have gone and produced something, undoubtedly, but I think what Joe bought was just, it's the whole refining, it's the whole getting something that's as good as it can possibly be, rather than being that thing that you look at 2 weeks after, or 2 minutes after it comes back from the printer, saying, we should have really done that, or we should have done this.
So again, this is one of the spreads, which is a bit of the work section that had already appeared on the blog. This is an interview with a girl called Rita Eikonen, who we thought was brilliant. And the interview set, the magazines in three, the publications in three sections, work from the blog to be archived. These interviews where we go and speak to people face-to-face, or we speak to them on the phone, or we speak to them on Skype, but we never, ever type to them, and that's just so crucial. We were reading all these magazines that we were picking up anyway, and we've seen the same answers by all our favourite people. You can't have the same article again and again and again, and it was important to us that we weren't producing the same articles, because there is genuinely no point to it.
And so I think it's that idea that you go and meet someone, and you go prepared with a list of 20 questions, but after question two, they've said something that you didn't realise, and actually you go off on a complete tangent, and it's still relevant content. It's just something that by sending 10 questions over the email and getting 10 very dry answers back, it doesn't really have the same relation. Having said that, the interviews that we do online are very much firing off three questions, getting a response and going from there. If they do say something interesting, we might fire off another email and pick up on it, but there isn't the time to do it online, to do it on a regular basis, whereas the magazine's out twice a year. We really dedicate a month to going and researching the people that we're interviewing, going and interviewing, transcribing, getting the edit right, getting the images right, getting as much as possible right.
And then the final bit of the magazine is these features, where we speak to practitioners that we genuinely think are interesting, and instead of asking them to speak about their own work or to speak about something happening in the design industry, it's more to speak about what they like, what they're into, what do they think a design audience would be interested in. And this is Ian Wright writing about Jimi Hendrix, and that's it. And I think there's a real place for that in a design magazine.
But again, we've been doing the blog online for 2 years, free content, people could visit as many times as they want. We're printing something and putting it out there with a £10 price point and saying, right, if you want this, you've got to sort of give us something for it. We printed 1,500 and they sold out within about 4 weeks, which was great, but we were still doing all the packaging ourselves, still sending everything out ourselves.
Yeah, it's kind of zero glamour to it. We're in a freezing cold studio in Shoreditch, playing like on desks about this wide. And again, there's no thought. I don't know. I don't think we really thought about the space or any of those things. We just thought about getting this thing out as best we could. And at the same point, we're thinking, okay, so that the content's great online. We like that. The content we now feels quite strong in print. What else can it be? And so physical content, something we're really keen to push. And we created a series of talks where we asked one practitioner to bring two others with them. So instead of us saying, we want you and you to speak about this, this and this, we said, look, we think your work's great, bring in who you want. And so we had designers bring in taxidermists, bringing, it was a real, on a really small audience, maybe 30 odd people, so that there were real candid conversations happening.
All of those were then recorded and then put out as a podcast, video cast. Response was phenomenal. We got up to number 5 in the iTunes video podcast chart, which is one of those things, again, like selling the magazine out in 4 weeks. You don't expect that. It's that sort of natural progression is one of the things we're supposed to be talking about, but you can't, as much as you can plan, as much as you can say this is what we want to go and do, you can't predict that response.
So then at that point we moved into this studio.
Having not moved for a couple of months, we thought, we should probably move again.
And then because the first one did well, we thought we should do another one. There was no thought that we'd do 10 magazines. It was like, let's do one and see if it sells. So the second one turned up and we did 5,000 instead of 1,500. And the launch was a little bit bigger and we did it at, with Tom Dixon at the Dock. But then we were doing a launch, and again, it's exactly that thought, to do it a little bit differently. How do you show a magazine? A magazine is not to be put on the walls. So this is a self-indulgent, pointless thing. So I thought about how we could show the magazine off to the best of its ability. And so we tried to create the flat plan that was in the studio so people could maybe think about how we were working on it, how we were pushing things around. And these loose cards filling a whole wall was really successful. And to scoop back, there was a big bookcase with the number 2 spelled out. And we were just, again, however successful or not it was, we were genuinely trying to put a magazine together and a publication together in a way that we thought hadn't been done.
Everything we talked about so far is the sort of the publishing side of the studio. It's the blog, it's the print, it's the talks, it's all these little things. We've got a little bit of advertising online, which brings in a little bit of money, but almost all of it goes back into redeveloping the site and making tweaks. The publication makes a little bit of money, but it goes into the things that can make it better. The one side of the studio that we don't really talk about that much is the commercial side of the studio, which is the one word that we always talk about, which I think we've probably only mentioned once so far, is curation. It's the curation of content. And in the same way, we take that into going and introducing ourselves to brands, to work with them, to curate content, curate artwork, curate something that they need or think they need.
So this is a project really quickly that we ended up doing for a sports brand at the end of last year to help them, in their own words, create physical creative noise around a product launch. And that was it. And so we end up speaking with them, talking to them about what kind of artwork should be in there. And I guess long story short is that we can help with these artists that we know through the blog and through the magazine. We can help create work for them. So if that's campaigns, that's bits of print, that's websites, that's installations. But this is a 7-foot portrait of a footballer that we did with Ian Wright from the first issue, which looked kind of like nothing from far away, but
which you can't really see from there. But
each one made up of an individual badge. And then again, working with other illustrators and designers who we know to help actually provide a service for a client away from the standard design studio, in that there's a much, much more curatorial emphasis on what we do. And again, this is a girl called Louise Norton Morgan, who's a St. Martin's graduate, who we're putting in the same space as a big sports brand, but also a world-famous illustrator in Ian. But then also there's room for these people that we think it's nice that can discover where this sports brand are never going to find her. And that's a really, really important part.
But she draws she does the CMYK process and does a dot. It's a sort of half tone. She does a dot for each one. It's a comment on printing and stuff like that. Other people that we work with the Barbican. We do work with the Barbican, but that's not the Barbican. That's Pan Macmillan. Again, not a great image. Working with publishers to do the catalogues, make them a little bit more interesting, think about ways that people interact with them.
But I think all we're saying there is that we've gone kind of back to where we were at the beginning, in that we're now starting to become a design studio again, but with a different edge, in that our reference comes first before any of the content, and that clients like speaking to us because they like the blog and they know the kind of feel they're going to get with it. And then we just almost act as a production house to bring in the right people to do those jobs.
End of last year, we got a really nice email saying that we've been nominated for Designs of the Year at Design Museum. Totally unexpected, totally overwhelming, but really nice to be part of. Really nice to have that sort of recognition for things like that.
But that's only in there because we're talking about at the beginning, about 15 minutes ago, about earning £500 for our course, and that's it. That's genuinely the only goal. And then the recognition like that, and kind of moving studio a million times, and then we're on to our third magazine. You get to the point where actually the goals change a little bit, but the ethos is kind of the same. We're still two friends doing it because we love it, and now the kind of the motives change from trying to earn a little bit of money to pay three wages in a studio and to keep overheads. But actually, the ethos remains, and that do-it-yourself ethic, I guess, is still there.
Again, we had a magazine launch. We launched it at Paul Smith's showroom on Kingsway. Again, trying to look at the way in which people might want to sort of experience a magazine, showcasing the people's work that we interviewed, alongside, again, a flat plan, so you can sort of stand in front of this thing and look at.
But then, however far we think we may have come in that time, we're still packing them all ourselves. We're still writing a thank you note in every one to anyone who orders it online. And I don't think we're able to stop doing those things. And maybe it stops us ever becoming a huge company, but I think that's kind of all right.
So this is a photograph from this morning. This is where we're at now. Sort of a more professional studio. We've just taken on a designer to help with the commercial side of the studio. I think we will end up taking on someone at the end of summer, the girl that worked with us last year, to help on the sort of publishing side of the studio.
But essentially, we never, ever could have thought we'd be actually in a studio, in a space where we'd go every day to work from those kind of humble beginnings. And I think that, yeah, that's as DIY as it gets. But then there's also a thought about what we do next. Now, it's all kind of very flippant up till now. There's no plan. We're responsible for a few more people now, so there's kind of has to be a bit more of a plan. There's none of this. So we're kind of wondering what's next. But again, it's all built on demand, in that all we're trying, I think all good DIY practitioners or entrepreneurs do, is they see the demand in what they do, and if it's not working, they're brave enough to pull it back, and if it is working, they're brave enough to push it further. And so I guess
where have you used the word entrepreneur and then churn Apple? No, in no way trying to allude that we're anything like Apple, but it's that idea that you've got the first generation iPod on the left, which, due to the response, they've ended up now releasing the iPad today. And it's that thing of you see the different products as a real, you can probably name them as they came out in the years in which they came out, but there's all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, which I guess is what we've got a load of ideas. We sort of feel we know where it's nice that could be going, but it's all this stuff, it's all the DIY, it's all the thinking about what we could be doing, and then you get to showcase the product, you get to work on it loads, then you get to showcase the product.
But I think if anyone had told anyone that they'd have all their music collection in a box at the beginning and this would sell brilliantly and you wouldn't have any records, then 99% of people would have told you you're idiots. But then again, if that had failed, I'm sure that Steve Jobs would have pulled it back and pushed something else. And I think that's the only point we're really trying to make with that, is that it's all based on demand. And if everyone stops looking at the site tomorrow, we'll go and do something else because there'll be no business. And I think that not being precious is kind of the key to this DIY thing. So next it's probably back to Battersea, some flags and the power station. But that's it. Thanks very much. Questions?
Has anyone got any questions? Yeah.
How hard do you have to work to get designers to be insightful about what they do rather than just show it, do you think, when you interview people, and how much do you have to drag that out of them?
Definitely not drag it out. I think we pinpoint people who we think are going to have something to say, who are kind of diverse enough and there's enough to say, but it's genuinely not that difficult. I think when it's almost like we speak quite a lot about our tone, and there's a tone for what we do that people turn down being in the magazine because they don't like that or they do like it. And so I think when we get to that point of interviewing people, they're kind of ready for a chat rather than a kind of a classic hard interview.
Speak through the mic. Because there is insight there, and I think it's surprising because you don't get that all the time. So do they, I mean, how do you prep them for it? Do you send them emails first and say, right, here's how we're going to do this?
Is this for the magazine or is this for the blog?
Blog.
For the blog. I guess the blog's a bit different. It's when we see something that I think warrants more than one image and 50 words. And of course, you get some great ones that people are really responsive. You get some that people clearly either couldn't be asked or whatever. And because you've sort of sent the email saying, will you do this? You sort of put it up anyway because you still think it showcases. But you build the relationships that way. You then end up, they then tell you when the next project's out and you then maybe run something again. I think it's pretty hit and miss online. I'd like to think it's more hit than miss. But
it's very easy to ignore emails and it's very easy to copy and paste answers, which is why exists a printed publication. It's why it still exists probably. It's not there just for us to say we do a magazine. It's there because of exactly the frustrations you're talking about.
Is there anything else?